Hello, and welcome to the Ipse Podcast. We hope you are enjoying the series. We wanted to give you a quick disclaimer that this episode has been previously recorded. Please feel free to check out our website, mobile app, S1Net page, and other social media channels for more information on Ipse. As we gear up for the Release 3 Go Live in December 2021, we are proud to have you in the fight with us. Enjoy the episode.
Ipse leads the way.
Ipse.
One system, personnel, and pay.
Ipse.
21st century.
Ipse.
Total force visibility online.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Ipse podcast. I'm Colonel Greg Johnson, and I'll be your host today. And today we're going to talk what might seem like not a very exciting topic. We're going to talk the authoritative data source topic. What is authoritative data sources? What does that mean for the Army? What's even the definition of that? And why does it matter to an audience listening to the Ipse podcast? So it seems a little dry, but I promise you this is going to be a good session. We brought in a couple of teammates that are on the Ipse program. We have Captain Josh Wilson and then Major Leo Cruz, who have been really working for the last couple of years to help us stabilize data in Release 2, and are very active and key members of the team focusing on Release 3 and what we'll do for Release 3 as we field that to the Army in December of 21. So let's have these two individuals introduce themselves. Let's start with Major Leo Cruz. Tell me a little bit about yourself, Leo, and what you focus on and what you do, and we'll get started.
Yes, sir. Thanks for the intro. So on the program, I'm actually an operational research and systems analysis, FA-49. And just for people who are not familiar with that field, these are data geeks, as some would say. I came to the program in April of 2019. Prior to that, I was a signal officer, and actually I was stationed at Fort Gordon, Georgia. And then I saw the opportunity to come here, and so I came here, like I said, in April 2019. And since then, I shifted my focus to be a FA-49 because of a lot of things that I was exposed to here on the program. Really cutting edge technology here and really interesting things we're doing with data for the Army to kind of shape our force and make us a more ready and lethal organization.
Ready and lethal. I think we targeted you by, you know, looking for you out in the Army. Right. I mean, how did we engage you? I mean, maybe tell that story, Leo. It's I think, pretty interesting from my perspective.
Yeah. So I remember I saw the brochure on one of those branch emails. And so I responded to it. And it was Captain Akani, I remember, who followed up on me. And man, he was aggressive. And I remember like having the conversation, not sure if it was going to go anywhere. And then I hear another callback. And it's kind of like more like you're going to come here. And I was like, OK, here we go.
That's right. Well, I mean, I think we were at a point in the program where we, you know, we're really looking for talent, and specifically in the data perspective, systems, data analytics. And, you know, we put a call out to try and find folks and, you know, bring them to the program and go after the big problem. You know, and hence we found you and probably about 15 others that really came in. I mean, Josh is another one of those guys that we went out and, you know, shook the Army and said, hey, we need folks with these kinds of talents, these knowledge, skills and abilities and behaviors and bring them into the team. You know, over to you, Josh, maybe introduce yourself and then we'll get into this, you know, I don't know, authoritative data sources discussion.
Thank you, sir. Yes, my name is Captain Joshua Wilson. I'm also an operations research systems analysis, FA-49, as Major Cruz is. And I, too, was a signal officer previously and posted at Fort Gordon. It's surprising that I never met Major Cruz during the course of my career, but such is the way of the Army. I was actually recruited to the Ipse program through Facebook. It reached out to me during a rather boring lunch hour, the Ipse advertisement. And I felt like it was an opportunity to make a difference in the Army. Up until that point, I had been enjoying my first foray as a staff member working for Army Cyber Command. But really the work that I was doing there, although valuable, was, you know, purely conceptual in basis. I was coming up with ideas and plans and things that may or may not have been implemented, whereas the work that I saw that IPSA was doing was actually going to provide tangible results and differences in the Army. And that's what really attracted me to the program. And again, I contacted Captain Akani, who was very receptive to me joining the program. And a few short weeks later, I was winging my way over to the program at Crystal City. And I haven't looked back since.
Nah, thanks. Thanks for running through that. I mean, up front, hey, here's the disclaimer. I didn't go after horses up front in the program. You guys were all different branches, but probably more importantly, you guys just had that analytical skill set that, you know, you guys can work with data. You guys can work with systems. You have some understanding of coding, you know, that's kind of the skill set that we were looking for to jump on the team. And then work with some HR folks and some finance folks and really go after this data structure problem set we have, not just with IPSA, but with the entire HR enterprise. And that probably gets to, you know, what's this authoritative data source thing about? You know, for me up front, it's just kind of, hey, the HR enterprise, I'll give a little bit of background for listeners. You know, over 200 systems, personnel and pay systems in the Army, lots of interfaces, lots of data. In fact, there's just massive data sprawl. So if you go to the Human Resources Command, a lot of things interplaying with one another where you have, you know, 800,000 data elements. But in reality, it's only maybe 3,000 to 4,000 master data elements. But there's so much kind of interplay with these different systems, different things that, you know, it's very difficult to boil down what's authoritative, where it's coming from, and then what data should be used when making certain decisions, assignment, readiness, et cetera. And that only gets worse as you go down inside the Army to lower levels. So, you know, something that we wanted to take a look at as we move forward and modernized IPSA is, you know, where's the data coming from and how do you centralize the HR data into one platform like IPSA? So maybe, hey, Leo, maybe you take a little bit of a, you know, what's your take on this authoritative data in the Army and what we're doing in IPSA?
Yeah, I mean, so like you said, sir, before I came on this program, I didn't know what authoritative data source meant. And I think a lot of people don't. And as a point of reference, I think here on the program, we use authoritative data sources interchangeably with the DoD term authoritative source. And how that's defined is it's a source of data or information that is recognized by members, the common or community of interest that's to be validated or trusted because it's considered to be highly reliable or accurate, or it's from an official publication or research or reference. And so, like you were alluding to, sir, what you have in a very data-rich environment is, we call it data collisions, sometimes data fratricide, where you say, I'm the authority for this data source, but somebody else comes and says, no, I'm the authority for this data source, or they don't even say that, and it just becomes a battle of who's got the right answer, who's got the picture for what this data means, and is it accurate or is it right? And you know, IPSA is really kind of on the leading edge of this battle to try to bring some order to the Army in terms of authoritative data sources. And it's not an easy one. It's very complex, like you said, sir. And it requires people with kind of a big data background, like Josh and myself, who understand kind of the nuances and the importance of big data, especially now we're seeing that become a very big thing in industry. So I think to your question, sir, as far as the Army and authoritative data sources, right now we have to bring some order, some governance, some more discipline to how we are defining and exchanging data.
So Josh sent me this just now, right? He texts me and says, sir, use the DoD 8320.2 definition. And so I'm going to read it because Josh really wanted me to. Authoritative source, a source of data or information that is recognized by the members of a community of interest, HR, in air quotes, to be valid or trusted because it is considered to be highly reliable or accurate or is a form, an official publication reference, blah, 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 right? Dot, dot, dot. So that's one of our DoD, you know, guidance documents. And, you know, to spin it down into, I think, where everybody's going to understand, if you're in the active duty, you use a system called Emailpo. And most of your HR actions are done in that. You get to see your officer record brief or your soldier record brief, and you can see your assignments. You can see your military education. You can see all of that. But then, if you're an officer, right, you tend to look at TOPMIS and AIM 2, and look at that same officer record brief, and you care more what it looks like in AIM than what it looks like in EMILPO. And therefore, you have some redundancy of data elements that you can update in one system, even though the focal point should be another system. And so what that does is it creates data fratricide as you go up into these different systems, and it just creates a little bit of a mess because we've allowed some changes to happen in different places. Another example is your military education data should be right in something called ATARS. But most people don't go look at ATARS. They go look at whatever, TOPMIS or EMILPO. So you're not focused on fixing data in the place that it's authoritative from. As we go into IPSAE, we kill a bunch of these systems, right? No more EMILPO, no more TOPMIS, no more EDAS, no more TAPDB-AO, no more TAPDB-AE, ITAPDB, no more. You're using IPSAE as that focal point, and that becomes the authoritative data for, you know, source for just a whole host of HR data. And then we'll plug into a bunch of different systems that matter, right? So we'll still plug into ATARS, and we'll pull in military education training data. We'll plug into a system called MODS and pull in, you know, medical flag information, you know, your medical readiness level, temporary profile information, pull HEAS, and then, you know, you're in IPSAE, you know, taking a look at that. So I think that's maybe a broad overview of why this matters. I think the beauty of IPSAE is, bam, you're really looking at one system for a lot of this stuff now versus, you know, seven or eight. Yeah. So Josh, you know, maybe talk a little bit about what you've done with authoritative data in release two. For us, it's been, you know, a bit of a journey with data as we got going with the guard, and, you know, we're in a pretty dang good spot right now, but, you know, both you and Leo have been, you know, focused on that. Maybe you talk a little bit, about release two authoritative data.
Yes, sir. So one of the things I really want to start out with and saying, and it kind of piggybacks off what you were just talking about, is the fact that the United States Army has very much the same functions, processes, et cetera, as a civilian organization. But what's unique about the Army to any other organization in the world is the fact that we also encompass, or our data encompasses a lot more about an individual, to include things like their medical data, education, as you said, emergency contact information. So making sure that we're crystal clear on ADS could potentially be a life or death decision. I mean, if you're working for IBM and your phone number is incorrect in their database, you know, so be it, who really cares? But in the Army, an incorrect phone number could be a big deal, especially for a service member that maybe is downrange or has got themselves in a difficult position. So as I arrived onto the program and we were just beginning to push out release two, we had a lot of documentation in front of us that told us, you know, or gave us a picture of the data that we had. and, you know, where it resided in the database and where it had arrived from, and, you know, where it was then subsequently being sent. And what I tried to do is provide some sort of clarity to that data, because it's not really a two-dimensional thing. Having it on a piece of paper doesn't really allow you to picture it in its really its three-dimensional state. You know, how does it come in? Under what conditions does it come in? How does it affect business processes? How does it affect an individual? We have data in our databases that could stop soldiers getting promoted, stop soldiers advancing their careers. So we have to be absolutely certain that it's correct and that the source of that data is a singular source, one version of the truth, as opposed to multiple versions of the truth. And as you talked about earlier, sir, as well, you know, we have been relying on 200 or more systems. And, you know, some of those are the more common systems that we know, the email post, the top miss. Everyone knows those. Everyone's dealt with them at one time or another. But we've also got a lot of systems that maybe are the result of like maybe little cottage industries, you know, systems that were developed at specific posts, but then became very important for the people that used them. And, you know, they had their own data. And so this whole mishmash of data comes together, and nobody really knows who to update date of birth with. And so, yeah, so coming into release two, dealing purely with National Guard data, trying to get some clarity on that, trying to make the preparations for release three. That's really what I did in the first year as I came to the program, sir.
I mean, I'm just chewing on what you said. You know, one of the lines, Josh, that I wrote down as you were speaking, you said one version of the truth. So again, for those that are listening, I would just, in my mind, I can explain some of this, why this IPSA really matters. So if you're doing strength management and you're in a brigade in the best division in the Army, which is, Leo, what, right? What division is that? 1ID?
That's right. 1ID, sir.
First Infantry Division. If you're doing strength management in the First Infantry Division, you're probably using 3 or 4 systems. And then it's very difficult for you to understand how those soldiers are and positions are targeted in the HRC systems, because you don't have access to all the same things. So obviously, when you're using multiple systems and you're feeding data in multiple different ways, there's latency, and then there's just a different picture. So you're looking at your stuff at First ID and saying, hey, I need 54 people. And I need it because of these reasons. Then you go talk to your account managers and branch managers and all these different people at HRC, and they're seeing something very different. In fact, they're saying, actually, no, we have you targeted at 2 or 3 people, not 54 people. And part of that is just everybody has a different view with these different systems. There's different tools, data has proliferated. And it's just in different formats. And really IPSA jams all that together. You know, there's one HCM, human capital management module in IPSA. It's tied to PeopleSoft. And that is the same view that the HRC account managers see, the branch managers see, and then the unit. And so when someone's put on orders, or the unit is targeted to get certain, fills, HRC and the lowest level unit is seeing the exact same thing. It is, in essence, one version of the truth. And that scenario is about as exciting for me as an HR guy as anything I've seen in the Army, because, you know, I've been on that flip side as a strength manager in that best division in the Army, struggling to figure out what HRC was doing with my fills. Really trying to get a sight picture that made sense, and then having to spend lots of time visiting HRC to really talk through what that sight picture was. So IPSA, in essence, is going to give that one sight picture. It's going to provide the authoritative data to make those kinds of strength management decisions a little more efficient and a little easier for the Army. It's one of the biggest, most exciting things IPSA is bringing. Is this one kind of sight picture in the middle of the system for everybody that's using it. So commanders are going to see it, soldiers will see it, HRC and the enterprise will see it. It's pretty pretty exciting. So Leo, you also were involved in release two. You were really focused on some of the data being pushed to some legacy systems. You know, again, because the journey with IPSE is National Guard's first, right? They're using it. They have release two right now, and then we're moving to release three in December of 21. So not that many months away, where we put the reserves and the active in. Maybe talk about what you were doing with release two and what we were trying to fix with some of these legacy systems.
Yes, sir. So, I mean, for Josh and I were very closely connected when it came to the release two efforts. You know, Josh probably isn't saying it enough, but his efforts on trying to bring some order to all of the data that was in IPSE was huge, and he did a great job. And so what I did was I took that lay down of all those data sources, authoritative data sources that Josh brought some order to. And you have to process and handle authoritative data source very differently. You know, one of the things is it's supposed to be immutable. So that was one of the things we had to make sure the system was doing, was making sure we weren't modifying the integrity or the meaning of the data in a way such that you can no longer rely on it, right? So if, for example, you, like you said earlier, ATARs, they are the authoritative data source for your training record. You know, when it comes into IPSE and then we layer on our data on top of that, we have to make sure that we are not touching or messing with that authoritative data from ATARs as we send it downstream. And so what we were finding in release two was, you know, some of the understanding, right? And this is kind of the gap, was the functional understanding, the business processes. There were some slight deviations on the technical implementation. And that's why guys like myself and Josh were brought in on the program. We have a very strong technical background, and so we could help bridge the gap between what the Army expected in terms of business processes and how it was supposed to be implemented down at a very technical level. And so that's what I did. I helped to ensure that how we were sending data to our downstream partners was consistent with the functional requirements, and really providing another set of expertise in ICE to ensure the code and how the data was being managed along its life cycle was correct and consistent. And so oftentimes that would require us to be in these very active, engaged conversations with our stakeholders and the developers and the PM to make sure we were all working in collaboration and in synchronization to identify kind of the issues and then make sure that we were solving it, because we understood that National Guard is a very important mission, and we were doing as much as we can to ensure we were supporting that and that there was no impact to it.
Yeah, you know, the way that I'd add to what you helped us do too, Leo, is that, you know, we fed data to what, four National Guard legacy systems?
Yeah, that's correct, sir.
Yeah, so you know, we're feeding data to those four legacy systems. You got to make it work. You know, part of what is difficult when you have 200 personnel pay systems, different data structures, you know, a fight over what's authoritative. You end up spending all this time trying to make the data land from our system into that system, and then they're doing something different with the data. It just becomes a complete time suck on everybody to try to make all that work. And as you collapse systems, because in release three, you get rid of TAP-DBG, which is a big guard system. You go direct to DEERS, which is where benefits information is, specifically for the guard. I mean, it's really important for the guard and the reserves. You get rid of these intermediary systems that we were passing data through, which has errors, et cetera. And you really have a much cleaner connection for data to flow to other systems that stay up forever. And then you close on this one version of truth. You know, you're not looking in RCMSR on the reserves for basic HR data. You're looking in IPSE. You're not looking in RCAS, which is a guard system, for structure type data or MOB data, you're just looking in IPSAE. And so you really clean up the entire landscape as you go and centralize, you know, into one system. And then the other big thing too, is we're putting all three components in one. You know, the Army for 40 years, even longer than that probably, was running on multiple systems for each component. You know, even processes like semi-centralized promotions were done differently in each of the three components. You just were helping us make it all work, you know, in release two. I think you did a pretty good job. We're in a pretty good spot right now, Leo.
Thank you, sir. It wasn't easy, but great work on the team and effort by all to get this right.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Josh, too, is one of those unsung heroes. You know, people generally know Josh because he has a little bit of an accent, right, Josh?
Yes, that is correct, sir.
I mean, how does like a British guy end up in the U.S. Army, Josh?
So there were no decent jobs in England when I was there, sir. And, you know, I wanted to join the elite fighting force of the United States Army. My Army recruiter, who, you know, I'm still in touch with, I send him a card every time I get promoted to thank him for, you know, bringing me in on this. He was a phenomenal superstar. He recruited me in England from Germany. And, you know, I haven't looked back since.
I mean, there's more to the story that, you know what I mean, with your parents and all that, but that's pretty phenomenal. I'm glad we beat out the Air Force, Josh. It's our game. Yeah.
Yes,
well,
sir.
I agree. That's pretty good stuff. I'm distracted now. So Josh, maybe talk. So in release two, we're what, 600-ish authoritative data elements in release two. As we move to release three, what is that number going to look like? I know we're still going to finalize all that, you know, as we get through our testing this year and then field. And then we can just bounce around and talk a little bit about release three more broadly.
So, you know, as Major Cruz was talking, what was going through my mind was, you know, we did a lot in release two. And some of it was, you know, we were learning as we went along. But as we move into release three and as we're working on release three now, you know, we have a very good level playing field from which to sort of carry on our task in order to get to the release of the version three of this software. And we're in a good spot, like you said. You know, a lot of lessons learned. A lot of relationships have been built that weren't there previously. You know, we now have counterparts within the system integrator that we can go to. Major Cruz built up a lot of relationships, you know, trawling through individual lines of code for months on end and then going back to the developers and sitting down with them and, you know, actually getting an understanding from their side and his side, you know, what he's bringing to the table and what they're trying to code and put into the system. And similarly, myself sitting down with the people that are dealing with the actual individual data elements and trying to understand from their perspective what their constraints are, and then me filling them in on, you know, different things about the Army, the nuances, the regulations and everything that, you know, made them have to question, you know, whether or not to put certain data in certain fields. And so as we come into IPSAE release three and we talk about that 600 data elements that you referred to, we're also taking on a lot more functionality. We're subsuming a lot more systems as we come in to release three, and with it brings a lot more data elements. But as you said at the very beginning of this podcast, if you start with some sort of pie in the sky figure of like 800,000, there are a lot of clashes, there are a lot of duplicates and reused data. And so we whittle that down, and that's what I'm working on currently, because not only am I trying to combine the data elements from three Army components, but I'm also trying to filter out all of that other noise, all of that duplicate information that we absolutely don't need. And in doing so, you know, yes, eMILPO, TOPMIS, and those type of systems will probably be the source of data that we take on board. But there's all these little other outlier systems that may have key bits of information, and we've got to make sure that we understand those so that when we bring them into the system, we can identify them properly and make sure that we know that they're ADS to the IPSA Release 3 program. I hope that was clear.
I think it was, Josh. I think there's two points that I would tease out, though, right? So there's a subset of systems that we're going to convert data from and like kill. Right. So we're going to take 233 data elements from eMailPo. We're going to take a couple hundred data elements from TapDBR. We're going to kill eMailPo. And then we're going to kill a bunch of other things as we convert data, populate in IPSA. And that conversion takes place in December of 21, right before we go live. So that's one element. Most of that stuff becomes authoritative to IPSA as we go live. Then we have a bunch of other systems that we're sucking in data from, you know, 30 some odd systems that we're sucking data in from, and we're really sucking in data that's authoritative somewhere else. So structured data, right? Structured data is coming from Army Org server. Medical data is coming from mods. We're getting other data from DEERS. We're getting training data from DTMS, 2B, ATIS. We're getting onboarding data from ARIS, soon to be AIE. And then what Leo focuses a lot on is then we're also going to push data to a bunch of other places. We're going to push a bunch of data to HRC so they can continue to run a system called ASBS. We're going to push data to IPERMS, a bunch of other systems. And then, of course, other systems will ask for HR authoritative data from us. So those kind of two things are going on. But to your point, right, that's a lot of stuff we're weeding through, working through. It's just terribly complex. And then when we're all said and done, right, when you guys are done, you're going to end up circling back with the Army G6, right, and saying, hey, here's all the data elements in IPSA that's authoritative. Because the G6 is on a path to really help outline where all the authoritative data is in the entire Army, not just the HR enterprise. So then it's a little more clear, you know, this is the Army data strategy kind of vision. So then it becomes very clear what's authoritative and what's right, what's not. I think I got that right. Right, Josh?
Yes, sir. And I think it's also important to point out that, you know, as we take on all of this data, which, you know, I like to refer to as the illustrative data, it's the data that really paints the picture of the whole soldier, you know, the whole soldier record. You know, yes, we have his name, we have his address, we have telephone number, date of birth, all of that stuff. But then all this other data, like the medical readiness data, that's the stuff that is important to us because it tells us, hey, this soldier is deployable or this soldier is not deployable. And, you know, it allows business processes within IPSA to actually take place. And drawing a line and saying, hey, you know, we're authoritative for this and we're not authoritative for this. It's purely here for, you know, display purposes. It's important to know that because it stops people trying to modify things that they can't modify or have certain expectations that they can't meet. And allows them to know where those systems are should they need to go away and modify it. You know, if a soldier is being flagged for some medical reason and therefore is non-deployable, the S1 or the HR professional needs to know to be able to tell them, hey, you need to go back over to the medical community and get that right. I think that's a important piece in the entire ADS jigsaw.
I agree, you know, and some people might not like that though too. I'll be clear about that. I mean, some people say, hey, why can't I update my military education, my training data, in IPSA? So on the face of that's a great question. In civilian companies, generally that's the case. You don't have an HR system that separates training or workforce structure. It's all kind of in the HR system in the civilian world. But in the Army, we have it cut up because of responsibilities tied to Title 10. The G3, the Army owns training stuff. They also own structure stuff. They own the FM documents, the structure systems. And then there's a bunch of, unit-based mobilization platforms they have too. So that's not changing anytime soon. That stuff's over in their lane, and we're going to suck that data in and partner with, like an emerging system called ATIS that will replace the current training system. But that's just, we have to make sure people understand that. So make sure your training data is in the training database. Make sure your medical stuff's in the medical database.
I think the soldier, the experience of the soldier once IPSA goes live, sir, will actually be more pleasant and will probably counteract a lot of what you're talking about. I mean, for example, I recently went for a promotion board, and just to get my ORB updated, took days because, I was trying to find out what system to put, certain changes into. And then I was trying to monitor these systems to see if the changes took. And then I was going back and then trying them again in different systems. And that can be a huge frustration. And it's a frustration that's multiplied across every single officer or every single enlisted soldier in the Army. It's at multiple points within their career. And what IPSA brings to the table, it says, hey, no, all your HR data is here. It's going to be handled in this one singular system. And you're going to be able to update it sometimes by yourself at home, sitting on the sofa while you watch reruns of Seinfeld. Bringing that is going to be a fundamental difference to what we do right now. And I think the benefits that IPSA brings ultimately to the table will far outweigh those negligible things that, we already have to do in the Army anyway. I already have to go over to the medical community to update my medical records. That's not going to change. And so, I don't see that as being a bad thing.
I don't know about you, Leo, but I'm probably not watching Seinfeld. I may watch some, Anthony Bourdain or something like that, reruns. Battlestar Galactica, maybe.
I might watch Seinfeld. Simpsons.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Simpsons fan right here.
Not bad. Josh, I mean, you also didn't say that, IPSA rolls out mobile capability for soldiers, right? What you also get with IPSA, so you're centralizing, you'll clearly know what's authoritative in IPSA and what's not. But you can actually see it now too off of your personal mobile device. I mean, for me, this is the other big, awesome change that, you can be sitting at home watching Seinfeld. Kramer, I don't know. Is that the guy's name in that show?
I think he's called Seinfeld, sir.
No, the other guy, that like busted in the door. I have a bad memory, maybe. Anyway, you're at home on your couch watching Seinfeld, and you're actually on your phone in your HR record, either doing an action, checking on your profile, checking your pay, right? Checking where your leave form is, right? You're going to do your leave form in IPSA, and it's going to go route to your chain of command. And then as a soldier, you're going to have clarity and transparency of where that action is. And then same thing when it gets approved, there it is, it's in your phone. I took a flight yesterday. I had my boarding pass, put into my Apple wallet, right? And I'm walking around with my boarding pass. Well, you'll be able to just pull your leave form up on your phone. I mean, this is like radical, cool, awesome, all wrapped into one. And it's probably better than the show Seinfeld, right?
It was very popular show, sir.
all good. The other things that I would point out, because the clarity and transparency thing is, getting back to why is this authoritative data really matter? I think there's a couple of big points. This transparency thing, it cleans itself up. Like right now, it's very difficult to go into our Army system architecture and understand if your record is correct or not. You got to go look in a bunch of different places. Even the stuff that we're pulling in that's authoritative in other areas, we're going to pull in your training data, your education data. All of that's going to be in your profile. We call that the 25-point profile. Radical change. And you'll be able to see that on your personal mobile phone. When we go after the data and you centralize in a system, like IPSE, you're going to get rid of this redundancy of effort, of data. It's going to make our jobs as HR folks a little more efficient, because you're not going to have to piece 75 systems worth of data together in a spreadsheet and then try and make heads or tail over it. It's going to be sitting in IPSE, and the analytics will help you see it clearly in IPSE as an HR professional. But that's also for commanders. That's also for HRC. It's also for your higher headquarters. So if you're ForceCom, you can see very clearly, because everyone's using one system, what the readiness rate, what the manning rate, what's the slotting of those at first ID. Right, today, it's not very clear. In the IPSE environment, it becomes, you know, very clear. What this, I think, does is it gives a bunch of time back to S1s to do further analysis in areas that their commanders want them to do analysis. They can help with more talent management in the marketplace activities, recruiting for the marketplace activities. But then even second and third order, analyst tasks that today you just can't get to because you're trying to understand basic readiness. And then for the big army, that, you know, why do people matter? Why do people in the Pentagon or even Congress or other, why do they care about this whole concept? It's because as you reduce systems, as you streamline where the data is coming from, and you attack this data sprawl, it's less costly. We are spending so much money as an army today with all these different systems, all this different architecture, and then trying to streamline it. Not only does it take a couple of weeks to roll up how many female captains we have, it's latent when you get the answer. But it just costs a whole heck of a lot to support all of that and then not have an instantaneous answer. So we're going to do a lot of things that streamline that. But of course, it's a journey. Anyway, that's a big story, Leo. What do you think?
All right, so I think you're right. I mean, so I think in release three, for the initial release, we're going to be part of an ecosystem that involves 63 other partners, both giving data to IPSE and then IPSE sending data out too. So this represents an ecosystem. And like you said, there is a codependency, not maybe a codependency, but a reliance for other systems and other organizations to do business processes because they rely on knowing who's currently active duty in the Army, right? So they'd get that from us. And then they might want to know what their aviation scores are if they're being considered to be a pilot. Then they'd have to go to CAFRs or something like that, or whatever other system manages that type of data. And so, you know, in release three, we're entering this huge ecosystem. And, you know, when you talk about really ushering kind of a big data type of thing into the Army, it requires us to be able to share that data more efficiently and more transparently, like you said. And so one of the things that IPSE is doing is using a different model for how we share data with our partners. And, you know, the intent of doing that is, like you said, we reduce costs vastly, right? Because now we're not having to create all these custom interfaces with our partners. We provide a standard, right? This is how the data is represented, and we expose it. And then we allow authorized systems to come in, take that data, and then do whatever they need to do to it in order to be able to take that into their system and then execute their own business processes off of that. So that's kind of, I think, big picture where the Army is moving towards, and that's where IPSE is really leading the charge in that, is number one, like you said, being part of this large ecosystem for sharing data, reducing costs by eliminating redundancy, and then really just providing a platform that everyone in the Army can use to get that HR data that's so important for all of these functions that the Army is doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really smooth way to put it, Leo. And you even hit on how we're really changing how we share data as well. I don't know. I'm just really excited. We get moving with IPSE, get this kind of modernized, synchronized the authoritative data. you're able to display it better, share it, blah, blah, blah. But what's also happening, and we haven't really talked it yet, but we're also modernizing HRC, the Human Resources Command's, you know, IT infrastructure. So we're centralizing how we'll share data back and forth with HRC. I mean, they're doing much the same work with the internal systems there. I don't know, it's really exciting work. I mean, we're going after, you know, 40 years of data sprawl right now. And, you know, your guys' skill sets, your ORSAs now, but, you know, you were Signal playing in the cyber arena. You're really helping us get after this. And it's, you know, it's not something that we've had the ability to totally get after before. So pretty excited where we're headed.
I am too, sir. I think, you know, something that really inspired me about this program and what it represents is it's really a shift. It's a shift to how we manage people, and it's more holistic. You know, in my opinion, I've been in the Army, and, you know, generally we know how people move around or get selected or get assessed. And it's, you know, if not singular, very few dimensional. And so I'm really excited about the idea of really managing the whole person, putting them in the right job at the right time, and just leveraging the immense talent that we have in our force. I think there's just so many different backgrounds of people in the Army that, you know, shame on us if we're not recognizing that immense talent pool and using it to the best of our advantage.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point. You know, you take me right to some of our talent management initiatives. You know, one of the key points you kind of highlighted, hey, take the talents of people and then, you know, get them in the right place, right time. You know, that tagline. But the problem has been, right, in these systems that we've had, you haven't been able to track knowledge, skills, and behaviors. I mean, that's the killer. It goes right back to, you know, how you guys introduced yourself. We could figure out who had, when I was looking for talent, Cap McConney, I kind of stumbled into, ran into him. He's an AG guy, but is a technical expert, right? But it's a hobby. His dad was a computer science guy, teacher at Berkeley, all that. And we talked about, hey, how do we go find this talent? Well, we could query who has a computer science or a math degree. You can find some information out by looking at, you know, Signal and cyber guys and gals. But that's about it. Because our systems don't track, you know, those KSBs, experiences, civilian tool sets, you know, whatever it is, they don't do that. So we're moving into an area now where IPSA will facilitate tracking that and then using that data to really modernize HR. You know, one of my favorite books, and I'm kind of holding it up, right? You know, I got a little reading list here on the team. You know, one of them is this Work Rules book by Laszlo Bock. He used to be the lead people guy at Google. And you know, one of the reasons I really like this book is because it made me think about, you know, how we could try to help modernize the HR core, but also Army HR and talent in general. Bock kind of lays out in his HR department in Google, a full third of those HR people that are in the HR system, that are, you know, helping to do HR in the company, were data analytics folks. So essentially, like you guys, you know, folks that understood data and analytics and metrics. And he did it very deliberately, because how do you track business goals, you know, and things that matter for the company, unless you have that kind of skill set? And so for us, right, you guys are helping us think through, hey, how do you centralize this data? How do you build this architecture better? How do you structure the data so we can actually get to things like machine learning and AI? But first things first, you got to get through this mess. And I know we share this often with senior leaders. It's like, hey, the buzzwords out there are, you know, get to the cloud. And, you know, which are good goals, and get to AI, but we got to clean up some of this stuff that we have. When you have 800,000 data elements from all kinds of different sources, it's very difficult to streamline and think through what you got. And then also there's a lot of policy stuff in the way too. You know, how does the reserves and the guard, how are they governed? How do you bring them mobilization? How do you move components? Right. There's a lot of that stuff, different rules that are a bit tricky when it comes to a system. I really like that book though, cause it kind of makes you think a little bit differently. So I don't know what say you, Josh. I know you're reading a couple of books right now. What do you think?
Well, I agree, sir. Like when you look at the data and when you talk specifically about talent management, I mean, I don't think you've mentioned it, but what it does is it also puts us on a level playing field with employers in the civilian world, which is important from a recruitment point of view. I mean, historically, we've only had one road into getting people to come work for us or come to join the Army. And we really then took all their skills, their education and what have you, and then just completely ignored it. And so we have officers, for example, who come in, they want to be signal officers, they have a very specific skill set, but then they just get lumped into, say, a platoon leader role, which maybe isn't what they wanted to do. You know, they came in thinking they might be working with computers or programming or what have you, but they're actually leading soldiers, which, you know, isn't necessarily any everyone's forte. I think the medical community in the Army has been doing it for years, but it's easy for them because there's very specific ways to identify medical professionals. And so it's easy for them to go out and reach out and get those people. But what IPSA brings to the table is it allows us to sort of start reaching out and going after different professions and different talents and being very specific about what we're asking for, because now we can manage that information and we can say, hey, what do we have in our own ranks? And we can do specific searches and find people with very specific skills. And if we don't have them, then we can reach out and we can talk about, you know, direct commissioning people to come into the Army with very specific skill sets. And none of that's been possible before because we've never been able to look at the data and make any determination from it.
Yeah, I mean, you sound like the chief there, Josh.
Thanks, sir.
I mean, I'm talking chief of staff, right? I mean, that's exactly what he's pushing us for. Get the system out, right? Change the processes. Because again, you go back just a couple of years. There's no way the ORSA branch allows an HR system to have two ORSAs, right? Because that's traditionally not what the Army does. But we came in with very specific skill sets needed, and hence you guys are on the program. I got guys like Dan Park and Andy Foster and several others that are working with us at HRC with their modernization and how IPSA will interact with HRC, you know, FA guys, armor guys. Several years ago, there's no way that an armor guy is released to go work on an HR system. This is really exciting for just the Army in general, for me to be in the Army, to see how, you know, hey, we're opening up the aperture here to really use folks' skills to go after these wicked hard problems. There's no other way to say it. This big data problem, this big HR system problem is massive, and we're just going after it. And it's step by step, right? You know, we got release two out. We're going to release three. You know, release three won't be perfect. We'll still have problems with data, but you know, with the right effort and focus, and you know, that resiliency to keep pushing like the Army has, we'll continue to better this product and head towards release four. Do all payroll, and then continue to enhance how we're doing talent management. It's just, really exciting. You didn't talk about book. You got two options, Josh. What are you reading right now, or what's your favorite book?
Well, sir, I actually just finished one last night called How to Lie with Statistics, which was a book that was written, I believe, in the 1940s or 50s.
I have that book. Yeah.
Still very enlightening. And I really read that as a predecessor to another book that's a bit more modern. That talks about data, but I'm proud, or maybe not so proud, to say that I'm still trudging my way through Dune. It's I have never particularly liked the fantasy realm.
It's not fantasy, man.
Or I it's Fight hard words. Work is what it is.
It is hard work. But, you know, I love, yeah. But you're in the middle of hard work, Josh.
Yes, sir. It's a good book, I have to admit. There's some very interesting concepts in there. The invention of it, of a lot of new words, I don't sit very well with, like understanding what a ornithopter is, drives me up the wall. And then coming across it five chapters later and having to remember that is a bit of a challenge. But yeah, I am curious to get towards the end. As I've been reading it, I've seen it, more references to it, more cultural references to it, you know, across a variety of things. And so, you know, I realize how important it is to finish that book, and I will get there.
You know, you got to have plans upon plans upon plans upon plans, Josh.
Yes, sir.
That's all I'll say. I don't know, Leo, you're all quiet over there. Are you coming up with whatever your favorite book is?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I don't have a favorite book per se, but there is a book that I'm reading, or a series of books. Me and my wife are reading it. It's parenting books, because I think being at home and being locked up with our children for a lot of time has made us realize we probably need to get smarter, maybe manage talent better in our household with the kids. So I think
those are probably good choices, Leo.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, we're reading some talent, or I mean, some parenting books right now.
Well, that's talent development, right? You're buoying your ability to parent.
That's right.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And then you'll be able to bring that skill set back to helping us manage this program, right?
Exactly, sir.
I mean, one of the things I love the most about Dune, and for most folks, I mean, I'm a big fan of that book. It's just the human dimension stuff. I mean, it's the human dimension is like the hardest thing to work through and manage, you know, teams and dynamics and just people's kind of motivations and where folks are going. And how do you bring all that together to create a cohesive team? You know, the Army's working on a lot of problems right now. A lot of them are down, you know, at that cohesion unit level, because we're just bouncing into each other with this human dynamics stuff. You know, either language is off, you know, the caring is off, right? We're just working on that collectively as leaders. And for me, I don't know, there's a lot in that book that I just think is really good stuff. So Leo, I don't know, that sounds like a pretty good choice.
Yeah, me and my wife thought so too, sir. And I think you're right, though. I think a lot of the challenges we have in the Army are just related to how we care for each other. And that it's kind of simple in talk, but hard, I think, in practice in some cases, because, you know, we need to practice at it. So I agree.
Yeah. The relation stuff is difficult. And you got to work at it. I think everybody has to work at it. You know, in this case, I mean, we can circle it back to this authoritative data. What we found, or what I found, I know you guys will agree with this, you know, as we started to talk to systems that needed to be subsumed, you know, people fought us really hard because they didn't want their system to go away, right? You know, if you work and your blood, sweat, and tears are tied to a system, even if it's from 1983 and it's a green screen with black lettering and, you know, people still defended it like it was the best thing ever. And we had to work through that, saying, hey, you know, we're not getting rid of your job per se, right? We're just transitioning capability into IPSA, and then your function will change a little bit. But we can do this more modernized for a bunch of different reasons why we, you know, need to keep moving the ball down the field here. Another reason why, you know, just that, you know, sometimes that clash of personalities, how do you work through that to be successful? You know, with a big project like this, just really, really, you know, something like Dune is just really a fascinating read based on that. But with that, you know, I think this has been a great session. Really enjoyed talking, kind of a technical topic, right? You know, authoritative data sources. It doesn't seem exciting per se on first blush, but certainly an important topic, and it's certainly key to where we're headed with IPSA. You know, for those out in the blogosphere and the podcast land, we're on every social media outlet, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. You know, please continue to follow us there. We're moving into a period that focuses on IPSA training. We're gonna have several live training events, but then also net training for IPSA. So if you're an HR professional, those pieces of training, UPKs, recorded sessions, et cetera, will be available to you here real soon. So just plug in, focus, and let's drive this thing to success in December of 21 to get release 3 out to the whole arm. With that, I just want to say thanks, guys. Been a great session. And with that, have a good night. 24/7, 365.